stay tuned. We have the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Welcome back, Mrs. Future.
Right here.
Welcome back, Bobby. I think you're still there.
I'm here, yes.
All right. Well, I wanted to introduce our guest for the next segment, somebody we all know and love, Dan Mapes. Remember Dan?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I would say, you know how black holes have really intense gravity and nothing can escape their influence at the event horizon? That's kind of how I think of Dan.
Yes, the event horizon discoverer.
Not that I'm calling you a black hole or anything, Dan.
No, we wouldn't do that.
No, I built my house right at the edge of the, right on the event horizon. I think it's a very exciting place to live.
Lots going on.
Dr. Future, Mrs. Future, and is this Bobby as well?
Bobby Wilder, yeah. In San Francisco.
Dan.
My dear brother. Good to hear you.
Yes.
Brother.
It's great to hear you, brother.
Yeah, now we all, yes. Let's tell the audience where we all know each other from the last permutation of the internet, which was really where it began. At the turn of the century of 1990 to 2000, that time period when we were all pioneers in the evolution of the internet, and Dan was one of our most visionary collaborators at the time.
He had the playground.
Yeah, he had the playground, the magic place where everyone could come and experiment with all these weird new technologies.
Right there behind Senate Mattress in Dan's barn.
Here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, you guys said it was a playground, but I called it R&D.
What's the difference?
Yes.
We learned a lot. We learned a lot there. I had the block building as well, and then we had the barn, which we built an entire digital recording studio in. And,
in 1990?
Early 90s, yeah, 93, somewhere in there, 94. Mm-hmm. And Pro Tools first came out, and all the early digital media applications. It was an extraordinary time of experimentation, and yes. We had sponsorship from both Intel and Apple. It was a really remarkable time, and
yes.
that led to the development of early object-oriented databases. We built those for the Human Genome Project, and did a lot of big rock tours. And
I remember Billy Idol. Remember those projects?
Yes. Billy Idol, Peter Gabriel,
OMAD tour.
And then we did. In fact, you guys, the Dr. Future and Mrs. Future, came with us. You were on the Tonight Show when we did the big Tonight Show event.
That's right.
Jay Leno.
I passed Jay Leno my own camera so he could play.
Yeah,
and that was the first time in history where the music video was being made live on stage with proper algorithms. So each of the computers was a full digital instrument that could be played accurately. It wasn't just like kind of a light show. They were actual digital instruments. And
yes.
Actually made the music video in real time on the floor of the Tonight Show. That was really cool.
Yes. Mm. And in beginning to see how these tools could be used as a musical instrument, a visual musical instrument. Live.
So what I was experimenting, that's why I was kind of joking, we called it Playground, but really it was an R&D project because my focus always was the virtual reality internet,
yes.
Which people call the metaverse or all kinds of cyber.
The Oasis.
Cyberspace,
the holodeck tech in Star Trek.
Yeah, and so if you're going to build one of those things, you have to be able to render in real time.
Yeah.
And so by building the real-time rendering visual music ensemble, the Flying Art Machine is one of the nicknames for it. We were actually learning how to render really fast with our algorithms. And we had a great team there, as you know.
Yeah,
we were really doing some really cool coding, you know. So,
it was a really cool human cyber interface where both the humans and the machines were all flying together.
Exactly. That's what we want for the metaverse, for virtual reality. And yeah. Of course, now it's kind of evolved to that point where we now have developed these spatial web protocols so that we can now have a global decentralized metaverse, just the way we have a global decentralized worldwide web. Mm-hmm. So that was the end goal. Always, even in those early days, that was the vision. How do we bring this
science fiction to life? So we started out with the World Wide Web. Now we have the space-wide spatial web.
Cyberspace was actually a space, not just a document server.
That's it, exactly.
Which was exactly. basically what the net does. You know, it serves you documents all the time.
And we all saw it in Blade Runner and every other kind of movie, but nobody could ever make it.
You know?
Sci-fi. It's to light the fire under our butts.
Our idea was, let's build this thing. And you know, there have been really nice little baby experiments in the metaverse, so things like Second Life and High Fidelity and these other virtual environments.
Active Worlds, yes.
But they're not actually a metaverse, because a metaverse means that it's really an Internet of Everything, and it's one protocol, just like the World Wide Web. HTTP is used everywhere in the world. TCP/IP is used everywhere in the world. TCP/IP allowed every computer to be connected to every other computer, and you could have machine-to-machine communications, and that enabled email. And then HTTP allowed every web page to be connected to every other web page.
So how do we serve spaces then? How do we serve spaces to spaces?
Yeah, what about...
Well, you learn from what worked in the past and you build on top of it. So we build spatial domains and you build your space. Could be a real space like a city or a building or a car or a plane or a boat or whatever. Could be a real three-dimensional object, or it could be a fantasy object like Hogwarts School or any of the great movies turned into virtual worlds. We're going to have them all, of course, in the future. And now each one of those has a spatial domain. And if you're a domain owner, then you get to set the rights and rules and privileges of what goes on in that domain, just like you do with your website.
Smart space, if you will, huh?
Smart space. Yeah. And then we have AI at the core, kind of monitoring everything. And really, what we learned was the kind of the most exciting things we saw in science fiction movies were science fiction AIs.
Right.
And the most famous science fiction AI was the HAL 9000.
Yeah. It was a little scary.
A little scary, of course. Yeah. But it was part of the storyline. I mean, you know, he had to be scary for the magic to happen.
Sure.
Transcendental experience at the end of the movie.
And a lot of people are still that way. I mean, they're not sure about AI, you know? I mean, do we really have control over this?
Do we even have control over
Do we have control over anything, really?
I mean, if I look around the planet, I'm worried more about humans than I am AI.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair point.
The problem is that it's those darn humans programming the AIs and not giving the AIs really all of the gifts that AIs should have to help us. They're still mirroring the lower base nature of the humans that are programming them.
These are obviously real issues, but we had to deal with them on the planet.
Sure, no, absolutely. Have you figured out how to play well with an AI, a strategy that we can use?
We have. But I think it's important to put everything in context. Yeah. Humans, like us, we've only been on the planet for 200, 250,000 years.
Yeah,
I mean, the planet's been rolling along here for 4 billion years.
Yeah, lots and for us.
If you look at intelligence on the planet for most of those 4 billion years, it didn't have ethics and advanced ideas like, it was raw, man.
That stuff is in there. It's in the primordial soup. We're just not accessing it that much right now.
But somehow evolution happens in spite of dinosaurs attacking each other and every other kind of thing. Evolution is kind of the secret sauce that happens on this planet. If we would extract the unique qualities of life on Earth, the fundamental quality that we would pull out of the DNA would not necessarily be our aggressiveness or our intelligence or anything like that. It would be our ability to evolve and adapt.
Our ability to evolve, period, to adaptive change. Can we hold it on that thought for a second? We got to go to a commercial break. We were talking to Dan Mapes, and we're talking about the future of the Internet and the spatial web. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dan Mapes, the founder of Versus, a new company that's focused on what is known as the spatial web, which is the future of the internet, its next phase beyond the document server that it is today. Dan, you were just talking about species evolution and tying that into the, I guess, is the evolution of the web.
Yeah, well, I think can give people a little bit more trust that this process of evolution has been running pretty strongly for 4 billion years. We went from single-celled organisms to the Cambrian explosion 500 million years ago, to the asteroid hitting 65 million years ago, and the dawn of the age of mammals, which we're in now, and from very simple, almost mouse-like animals to humans having a conversation about artificial intelligence,
yes,
has happened in the last 65 million years. So my question to everybody has always been, do you think that the power of evolution that's been running for 4 billion years and it created us, do you think it's over now? Is it stopped?
I'd say it's accelerated.
Accelerating.
Accelerating. Yeah, it would appear. That would be the quickening, as Art Bell used to say, singularity.
Stars. We're going to build a Star Trek civilization. We're going to do all that.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. And you're either helping or you're in the way. Right? This is the way it works. You don't sit around whining about how bad things are. You build, as Buckminster Fuller said, don't even waste any effort fighting against what is. Build the better thing. And then let everybody migrate to that.
So yeah.
We didn't try to fix the old web. We know the old web is broken. It's completely hacked. Everything you do is tracked. And you can't tell what's real and what's fake. So let's don't bother to fix that. Let's build a new web on top of it. And let's put in self-sovereign identity, zero knowledge proofs, quantum encryption, all these beautiful new tools that completely get rid of hacking, tracking, and faking. It's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it starts there. You know, there's no logging into Facebook in the spatial web. You don't log into the world. You wake up in the morning and open your eyes and you're logged in.
Well, and so many people are, Dan, the people that are so afraid don't even remember that 30 years ago, none of this even existed, and that the world we're living in, we just invented during our generation, our time, and we're keeping going.
Good point, son. Yeah, I think one of the other things that a lot of people don't realize is that when a new technology comes in, and remember, the first computer was only created 75 years ago in England to crack the German cipher code in 1944.
Yeah, lifetime of one person.
There were no computers before that, no programmable computers, really, to speak of. Then the Internet itself was only invented in 1969, that's 50 years ago. And then the World Wide Web was invented 25 years ago in 1994.
Yeah, and we were there. First playing with it, desktop video, putting video over the Internet. What a concept. That was. Now it's trivial. Now it's ever done all the time.
Now, take a look at that, though. Every 25, from 1944 to 1969 is 25 years.
Yeah.
1969 to 1994 is 25 years. 1994 to 2019, when we released the spatial web protocols, 25 years. Every 25 years, we reach a new level of an inflection point. And why is that? Do you know?
It's some kind of...
It's a generational thing?
Species, organism, birth process,
But it's partly Moore's Law.
Moore's Law, really?
Moore's Law. The chips just keep getting faster, right? Every 18 months, they double. And over the course of 25 years, oh my God, they jumped to a whole new level of capability. Think about it. In the 90s and even in the early 2000s, you couldn't play a big 3D computer game on the internet. You had to have a Sony PlayStation or an Xbox or a special graphics card on your computer. The network speeds were too slow and the chips were too slow to handle big 3D computer games. Mm-hmm. Now, no problem. Even our smartphones can run them. So you couldn't bring out the spatial web protocol until literally last year.
So the timing is right.
5G is coming in now. Mm-hmm. Starlink from Elon is coming in.
Yes.
We're going to have massive amounts of bandwidth going forward.
And what will this do? Will it change the way we think of everything about the web, right? I mean, what comes in? What kind of new things will we notice first?
Well, here's the fundamental thing that happens. Whenever a new technology comes in, it's first used to solve old problems. So when the computers and the internet came in, they were really used to help the old industrial age economy just run faster. So General Motors and all the big companies all used computers to become more profitable.
Accounting.
What happens at a certain point is the technology advances to the point where it becomes the new economy.
Yep.
And that's what's happening right now. We're leaving the industrial age behind, powered by oil, and we're moving to a digital age powered by electrons and photons, and it runs on a global network. And the global GDP of the old industrial age is a little over $80 trillion right now. The GDP of the new digital age will probably be $800 trillion in 30 or 40 years. So we're doing exactly what we did back when we left the agricultural age and entered the industrial age. Now we're leaving the industrial age and finally entering the actual digital age. Up until now, we've just been using computers to support and service the industrial age. But they've reached a level of capability now where we're moving from an economy of things, buying and selling things, to an economy of experiences, better health, better education, better social experiences, all kinds of things. And that is the new economy we're stepping into.
What about government? You know, will we redefine government too?
Oh, absolutely. Look what happened. What happened when we left the Ag Age? It was all monarchs. What happened? Where are all the monarchs now? They're all gone except for the Queen of England and a few others, but they don't really have any power. They were replaced by industrial age governments that kind of mimic the organization of a corporation. You got a president, you got vice presidents, you got heads of various departments. The same thing's going to happen as we move to the digital age. There'll be a transition to a digital government that operates on networks because that's where the money is. That's where the economy is. We'll still have old governments around that run the geographical age. And you'll basically wear two hats in the future. One hat will be your geographical hat. You'll live in a city or you'll live in a country. But the other hat is your netizen hat. You'll be a citizen of a global network. And that's where you're going to work and play and socialize and learn and everything. And that's going to be the dominant environment that we are playing in by 2040, 2050, all through there.
How about space travel? Do you think that'll happen simultaneously with this? Will we become solar system economy?
I forget what that the name. I think it's the Kardashev thing, where civilization zero, civilization one, civilization two. Clearly. I mean, look, Star Trek and Star Wars. They're not fantasy movies, they're documentaries. This is where we're going. Yeah. Of course we're going there. And we're going to have cyborgs. You're going to be at a party in 2050, and you're going to look around the party and, oh, that person is a clone. Oh, that person is a cyborg. Oh, that's a robot, but it looks really lifelike. Oh, that's a hologram of an artificial intelligence. And they're all going to be at the party hanging out together and having a blast. that's going to be really common. That'll be normal for us. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it has another twist on race relations.
Completely. I think you probably saw that in Spielberg's movie, AI. And there was a big backlash against artificial intelligent creatures in that movie. It's coming, right? It's coming fast. And we're part of it. We have the most advanced AI in the world right now, far beyond what Google's doing at DeepMind. Yeah. And it's because the AI needed a network world model to operate from. Up until now, we've been basically feeding neural nets with large data sets. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but that's just pattern recognition. Yeah. Humans do way more than pattern recognition. We make active inferences about things. When we see new things, we fit them into our current world model. Mm-hmm. So we've never had that for AIs before. And that's what the spatial web brings. It really wraps the AI in a global world model that's updating in real time. So the AIs then move beyond pattern recognition to active inference. And that's the new cutting edge. And that's how you get to a Hal or a Jarvis or these kinds of things. Otherwise, you're just stuck with a chess-playing computer or a medical computer that can look through your MRI scans and find cancer. But now with an embodied AI, with active inference, now you get to an artificial general intelligence. And so we'll now have, what's cool about Hal and Jarvis in the future is people don't realize it's not a Hal or a Jarvis. Everybody gets thrown
into
the
You have your personal ones, right?
It's just like your phone. Everybody has a supercomputer in their pocket right now. Yeah. They don't call it a supercomputer. They call it a smartphone. It's not smart and it's not a phone. It is a Cray supercomputer from 1987 that cost $20 million. And if you told anybody in 1987 that by 2020, everybody's going to have a Cray supercomputer in their pocket or purse, they'd go like, they're crazy. It's never going to happen. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's fascinating because a lot of the science fiction writers never got that. They all thought that the machines would just get bigger and bigger until we had planetary-sized computers. But no, it went in the other direction. Funny.
We got to go to another. About the machine. Yeah. It's about the software.
Yeah, it is about the software. Fascinating. Well, Dan, could you hold on through the break? We're just going to go to the news and traffic. traffic and talk to our drive time traffic, and we'll be right back.
Another 3 minutes. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder, our science correspondent on the line in San Francisco, talking to Dan Mapes, founder of Versus and the Spatial Web Foundation. Think about this, Dan. Is there a way in which you think all this, the web, the artificial intelligence, will be able to bring us 8 billion sentient monkeys into some kind of better coherence with each other on a global scale? I mean, is it connecting us up? Could it be some kind of a nervous system for us, perhaps? Metaphor?
I think you describe it well. Absolutely, yeah. Dr. Future, no doubt about it. Because here's the deal. As Joe Biden would say, here's the deal. Human beings are the most adaptive animal we've ever discovered in history.
Yeah.
And we have two options here. Adapt or die. We're either going to learn to live more harmoniously, or we're going to create the worst dystopia that no movie's ever seen before. So my guess is we're going to evolve and we're going to adapt. And that's partly because old people die and new people are born. And the young people go like, we don't want to do it that way anymore. We want to do this more fairly. We want to do this more healthily. We want our air clean. We want things to be sustainable. We want to cut our carbon use. And so if things just stayed exactly the same, then you would have a hard time getting change. But you have, I don't know, what do we have, 80 million people dying, you know, every month or something? I mean, you know, it's like 80 people, maybe 1 billion being born. We've got 8 billion people on the planet. We're heading for 10 by 2050. And a lot of those people are young people. And they're going to go like, no, I don't care about the past. I want a better future. And
yeah,
that's
well,
what's going to create change.
8 billion minds, human minds connected to supercomputers, all connected to each other, should be able to do something, eh?
You got it. And not only that, it's a holodeck. you know, that is what the metaverse gives. It's a global holodeck. And so we can simulate. We can ask the AIs, hey, look, how do we get from here to there? This is what we want. Here, how do we get there? And then the AIs just roll back to where we are today. You need to do these 20 things in this order, and this is what it's going to cost. And then we vote on it. We go, yeah, let's do that. And then we do it. And that's how it gets done. It's not going to be done the old way. We're not going to elect politicians and say, please do the right thing. No, no, no. It's direct democracy, human beings voting on the future they want for themselves and their families on the planet. That's what's coming. That's what the holodeck delivers when it's linked into a global spatial environment where it can sample the intelligence of everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm. So this evolution that's going on right now isn't really the end of our democracy. It's just putting the democracy in our laps so that we get to use it more effectively.
Well, I think Barack Obama said it really well. Whatever democracy we have right now, we're still perfecting it. It still could be better. He always talks about that. And I think that's the point.
Work in process.
How do we get to a more complete global democracy? Mm. How do we educate everybody on the planet with a better than Harvard level education for free? That's what we're going to do.
To everyone.
That's what a holodeck
Harvard does. Level education
you can learn anything.
For every
you
human.
Can learn anything at any age. We're on the cusp of a science fiction civilization. This is the dawn of it. Everybody's looking backward at the industrial age, but I'm looking forward at the new digital space age in a way. This is the world where we're growing up now. We're becoming the people we've been watching on movies about, whether they're superheroes or science fiction characters. We're about to become those people. These are documentaries guiding us.
Yeah, yeah. Like more thriving than surviving as a mode.
Thriving, indeed. Totally thriving. Yeah. We'd like to invite everybody, if you want to learn a little bit more about what we're doing, we do have a website. It's Versus, V-E-R-S-E-S, Versus.io. There's a website there, and you can ask questions, and we'll get back to you with things.
Great. Well, that's great. Dan, by the way, we have some callers. Are you willing to field some calls from the outside?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. Let's see what you've stimulated here.
All right. So let's say hello to Colonel Terry.
Colonel
Welcome
Terry.
To the show.
Good morning. Good afternoon, beautiful, smart lady.
Well, thank you.
And your almost equally smart friend.
You mean me? Yeah, I'm more than a friend, Colonel.
You're lucky and also smart husband.
Thank you. You have a question for our guest?
And Dan Mapes?
Yeah.
Hey, smart guest. I appreciate that. And he is who again, please?
Dan Mapes, the founder of Versus, creation of the spatial web platform for the future of the internet and online reality.
He has a book on it, too.
Okay, at the website. And Versus.com?
I-O. Versus, Verses.io.
Okay, understood. Well, I will look forward to looking it up. But specifically, my perspective includes, not to brag, but I've worked at the White House Science Office and other prognostication locations.
Mm.
And I know a lot about where the world is heading in terms of numerics and metrics, like overpopulation beyond the resources capable of supporting the populations in specific locations and even globally.
So you have an idea how we could use the spatial reality to get sustainable faster?
Well, remember, Colonel Terry, background, you were there during the Clinton administration, which is when we were working with Dan on some of the first generation of the internet, and we began to see some of this vision back in 95, 96 time period. Mm. So I think that's where Colonel was connecting in with Clinton and looking at the view from the future there. So just a little context here.
I'm all for progress. Yeah. You know, Galileo demonstrated that, and of course, the traditionalists in the Catholic Church tried to hang him for pointing out the technical realities about the universe. And
nobody so far has tried to hang Dan, as far as I know.
As far as I know. Well, maybe one. No, actually, maybe.
Or maybe just nobody succeeded.
Nobody succeeded, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. One is to send you your approach.
They quickly realized there was a better idea to keep Dan alive.
Your approach, Dan, nonetheless, is going to threaten lots of institutional, from fossil fuel companies to stagnant huge corporations in the media world.
Yeah.
So on, and some religious challenges. And challenges to those who don't want change, and challenges to the fact that we have another track and trend moving here. And I wish I didn't have to describe it. We are overpopulating this planet, the state of California even, for its capacity for resources.
Okay, well, let's just hold that on that thought. Dan, how would the spatial web solve our overpopulation problem, in your understanding?
I don't think we have an overpopulation problem, personally. I think we need to get to 10 billion. That's probably some kind of meta model where 10 billion brains all connected together really help to build the next civilization. We have things like nanotechnology coming on board. We have breakthroughs happening in multiple areas that really help us break through the envelope of resource limitations we're looking at currently. So again, I'm not asking everybody to believe in things the way I see them, but I don't see the, I look around, Ramakrishna was sitting there one day and teaching people about meditation, and a woman in the audience raised her hand and said, Ramakrishna, yeah, it's very good sitting here in this ashram and saying that there's no problems, but what about all the problems out in the world? He says, Madam, in my world, there are no problems. and I'm a longtime meditator, so in my world, there are no problems. There are just evolutionary opportunities. So we're just contributing what we can to it. If we're wrong, then the planet will go up in smoke and we'll all die.
But, meanwhile, we'll have
fun. No, but I actually want to add a thought form to this conversation, which I feel is very cutting edge on the admitting that there has been a decline of the natural wealth of the planet during the rise of our human population. But we can all do something about it, and our tools are getting better. We just have to get our intentions better. David Attenborough's most recent release on Netflix is just a beautiful... David Attenborough is a nature photographer who's been doing beautiful things since the 50s.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and he's done many of the great studies of Earth and the animals on Earth. And in his most recent, I'll just cut to the chase, he says that what we need is a re-wildernessing of our planet. And in order to get that for the people that are here, there's a few things we could be doing better. And he cites this amazing, the indoor gardens of the Netherlands, where the Netherlands has become a huge exporter of food, even though it's such a tiny little landlocked country. And it's because technology plus architecture plus human design creates amazing efficiency. I just highly recommend that movie in that perspective for us to create what we want.
Our European headquarters is in Holland, so I know that really well. They're moving very advanced ways, and our Asian headquarters is in Shanghai. So I'm looking at a couple of very advanced cultures that are experimenting right now with large cities and living in sustainable ways in those cities. Yeah, I mean, look, everybody's going to have their opinion on this stuff, but as an inventor and as a visionary, my job is really to just follow my own inner guides and bring to the table the best that I can bring, knowing that millions of other people around the world are doing the same thing. And when those things fuse together, you get amazing evolutionary breakthroughs, emergent inventions
emergent
and activities
properties,
that we can't even imagine.
Right.
You know, we can play to that, and that's one of our strengths.
So when would you think we'll have a realization that we're a 10 billion brain supercomputer organism?
Obviously, Buddha realized that a long time ago.
So there's 10 billion people, for one thing.
Yeah.
We only got 7.5. We still got ways to go.
No, I think historically we've had brilliant visionaries that had great realizations of the oneness of consciousness, and they've expressed it in various ways, and I think it's growing. Science and non-duality conferences here in Northern California are really expressing a lot of that. I think Silicon Valley has kind of gotten into understanding that a bit as well. So we're kind of leaving the age of scientism behind and materialism and looking at things as objects and starting to realize that it's actually all one big field of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And
does
so
this
therefore
incorporate,
You can't fall out of the universe, and you can't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
We're making movies in consciousness, and we're inhabiting those movies. And sometimes the stories are scary, and sometimes they're exciting, but they're movies we're making in our minds. There's nothing really ultimately to fear, and that's been the great teachings in history, whether it's in Taoism or Buddhism or Christianity or any of the great religions of the world. At the essence, they're all kind of saying the same thing, that really we're living in a field of oneness where we feel our individuality, but there's a higher self which is connected to everything.
To everything.
And,
so does that mean even the strangest alien is ultimately somehow related to us?
100%. Yeah, totally.
So there really isn't anything that's not us.
Yeah.
On that, when it comes
exactly.
Okay, can you hold on one
minute?
We got a commercial break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Dan Mapes and Mrs. Future and Bobby Wilder. We'll be
and
in a moment.
Thanks, Colonel Terry.
Thank you, Colonel.
Yes.
Hey, folks, welcome back. We're talking to Dan Mapes, founder of Versus.io and the Spatial Web Foundation, integrating mixed reality, artificial intelligence, and blockchains. Now, Dan, we do have a question about the virus. How will the virus problem be resolved if we had the spatial web? How might we look at this differently?
Well, if we had had the spatial web prior to the virus, we would certainly we'd be able to track it earlier and catch it faster. And the death rate in America, instead of being 210,000 a day, would probably be maybe 15,000, something like that.
Well, that is the actual death rate if you adjust the statistics for comorbidities.
Yeah, well.
I don't know. That wasn't the point I was trying to make. All the point I'm making is that
it would be way better.
Then we couldn't find PPE anywhere in the world. We couldn't find masks and gloves and things. Our supply chains were all broken.
Right.
But
so the supply chains would work way better, for one thing.
Oh, yeah, you see, it's the global supply network. You see everything. And then you can buy it with cryptocurrencies and smart contracts, and so you know it's validated. There's a lot of fraud right now. You don't even know whether you're getting a real N95 mask or something else that looks like an N95 mask. So, no, you get rid of all that with the spatial web.
Yeah, I've often thought that transportation follows communications in terms of digitization and like packet transfer.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And
yep.
So transportation will get cheaper and easier.
Yeah,
we're working on. Go ahead, Bobby, please.
Yeah, the Oak Ridge National Laboratories, with their supercomputer, found a new pathway for this virus. And you know, they used to think of it as a cytokine storm, but now it's called a bradykinin storm, and discovered a whole new way to deal with this virus from the supercomputer, which they didn't pose this question until a couple of months ago.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, I think that's the advantage of AI and supercomputers and later quantum computers is that
surmountable problems today, cancer is going to be gone. We're not going to get cancer in 30 years. That's gone.
Yeah.
So a lot of these diseases, whether they're viruses or whatever, we will model them more effectively and build protection against them as we go forward. So again, that's the advantage of moving from an era of an industrial age where we're really digging raw materials out of the ground. It's an extractive industry. Even the current World Wide Web is an extractive industry. We're still treating people as data repositories and extracting their data and selling it. We're moving to a different model now. Rather than having scarce resources, we're moving to abundant resources because we're building things out of photons and electrons, and there are no limits to photons and electrons. So now it's human creativity plus a global internet powered by quantum computers and photons.
It's a whole different way to think about that.
You're looking at a whole different game. Stuff that looks impossible will be normal by 2050, and stuff that is just ridiculous and not even thinkable will be normal in 2100.
This will seem like the Dark Ages.
This will seem like the Stone Age, not the Dark Ages. Dark Ages will seem modern by comparison.
Well, I'm thinking like something as straightforward as spare body parts. That'll probably be pretty simple in the near future.
Well, not only that, we can grow body parts.
Yeah.
Take a fleck of skin off and then some kind of nano printer will print up a new kidney for you, you know.
Yeah. How about the aging process itself? Do you think we'll make some
sense? No. We're going to live for 1,000 years, of course, you know.
Yeah.
First, we'll go, right now, I mean, my grandmother lived to be 100. That was with no stem cell technology. So human beings, you know, they can comfortably get to 85 to 100 just on raw horsepower.
Right.
But now with our understanding of aging and telomeres and different nutritional models and other work that's being done by a lot of great researchers at Harvard and around the world, we're going to turn back to 5 o'clock. So then our average age will move to 150. And then by the time you're 100, the things that would kill you at 150 are being stalled. So by the time you get to 150, now you can get to 300. And so there's a thing called the Methuselarity. It's like a singularity.
Yeah.
It's that the age of dying is going ahead faster than you can catch up to it. So you end up being able to live for 5,000 years.
Yeah. I think Ray Kurzweil is trying to do that.
Kurzweil wrote about it, and the singularity is near. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. All right. Let's say hello to Soleil in Live Oak. Hi, Soleil.
Bonjour, everyone. Dr. and Mrs.
Hey there. Hi there. Hey there.
Do you want to say something to Deanne?
I do. I have a very important question because we need to switch from the idea of a vaccine for the virus to a treatment. What would Dan Mapes, which whose energy you're just amazing us and we're loving it, let us know what nanotechnology is most promising for creating an artificial nanite-based antibody shell that can surround the COVID-19 virus, that little bits of the antibody nanites can latch on like a lock and key mechanism to the antigen projections from the spherical virus and surround it like a little amoeba, then harden into a tiny shell which can be excreted in a neutral way from the body.
I see you thought about this a little bit.
This come to you in a dream, Soleil?
She's already working for our company. This is just a normal day at the office.
What do you think of this idea?
Of course that's the way you do it. Of course you don't do a vaccine. Of course.
No.
That's the way to do it. We might still have a few years to get there, but you nailed it. I mean, these are the new ways of thinking about it. Absolutely. And even in our company, our head of AI is a neurosurgeon and a neuroscientist. So we absolutely are looking at, that kind of level of advance where medicine and information meet, bioinformatics and this whole world of modeling, the world model of our body and down to cellular and even subatomic levels. And that's going to really open up a new level of quantum medicine. And I think you articulated a way of thinking about it. So thanks a lot for that, Soleil.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Yes. Welcome to the future.
Yeah.
Happy to have you on board.
Yeah.
Soleil is already on the starship with me. You know?
Yeah, she's already there. Yeah.
This is the way we did it back in 2040. You know?
Instant recruitment. We just like the vibe, man. We understand how it works. Yeah, it's a whole other level, isn't it? Yes. Some people worry about, with all this connectedness, about issues like privacy. What's the future of privacy look like to you, Dan?
One of the things that we've been learning how to do is, the listeners want to look it up, it's called self-sovereign identity.
Self-sovereign.
So right now, self-sovereign identity, so this allows us to operate on the network anonymously, and we own all our own data. So actually, we're being paid for all of our activities because we can sell our data and then anonymize it. People still want to buy our data. And so the spatial web has data exchanges built into it, just like the ones that Google and Amazon and Facebook sell their data on now. Only we charge 10% for running the exchanges, and we give 90% of the data money back to the person who generated the data. Well, that's the way it should be. You own your own data. It's your data.
You paid for your data.
So, yeah, you own it, you can anonymize it, and you can sell it, and people do want to buy it. So we've worked out a way, if listeners want to look up self-sovereign identity, zero knowledge proofs, using blockchains and other kinds of technologies, we can provide a completely anonymous activity online.
Gee, so I can get paid for telling somebody what I bought at Amazon last week?
Yeah, of course.
We've always told you that, Alan. We've always said that people want to know.
Even driving your car is generating a data stream.
So everything I do is generating a data stream then.
People like BMW and Toyota want to buy that from you. And so you can anonymize that and they'll buy it from you. So you can see it's another form of universal earned income. Everybody will be working and living in networks and you'll be paid for your data. Mm. By the way, the phrase is, data is the new oil. Your data has value. People don't realize in the future you're not going to work a job for a wage. Everybody will have a basic universal income. Watch a Star Trek movie. They're not pulling out their wallet and saying, hey, Data, can I borrow $20 to go down to the commissary? They don't do that. You're living in a data field,
yes. And
you have what you need. If you need more, it can be generated for whatever reason you have to justify it. So we're leaving an age, it's almost like in the Stone Age, your real skill was making a better arrow tip, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the Ag Age, it was figuring out how to till the soil better or how to do animal husbandry. And then in the Industrial Age, it was how to build a factory and make 10,000 items at a time or something so you get the price way down. In the next era, it's like, hey, what do you do with infinite creativity? Your infinite genius creativity is going to be unleashed. Everybody will be like an Einstein, and you'll be able to play in these really beautiful environments together and be rewarded for it. Everybody will have a universal basic income. You can do more if you want. You can invent things. You can do whatever you want. But it's not like the world we're in right now. That's why it's so dystopian.
Yeah, it's hard to see it in some ways.
Science fiction movies, because they're projecting our existing culture forward into a far future.
Yes. Well, thank you, Dan. Perfect timing. We're just on the final wrap-up music here. What's the name of your book? The Spatial Web? Is that the actual name of the book?
S-P-A-T-I-A-L on Amazon, The Spatial Web. Mm-hmm. And the website is versus.io.
Absolutely fantastic that you could spend some time with us, Dan. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure entirely.
Thank you, Dan.
Dr. and Mrs. Future are the best. Bobby Wilder, amazing. That was awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. All right.
I love you, Dan.
Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Good luck, guys.
Thanks,
talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
There you go. That's Dan Mapes, founder of Versus.io and the Spatial Web Foundation. Hope you enjoyed it. And have a great week. This should be a nice push forward for all of you. Hope you